Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm Ayan Bior in Washington. Here are some of the stories we're covering today, Thursday, September 21st, 2017. President Trump says the U.S. is closely monitoring events in South Sudan.
Millions of lives are at risk, and we continue to provide humanitarian assistance. But real results in halting this catastrophe will require an African-led peace process and the sincere, really sincere commitment of all parties involved.
And Kenya delays the rerun of its election for later next month.
They said that they did this in their tweet. They said it was in order to ensure that the commission is fully prepared to deliver an election that meets the standards set out by the Supreme Court.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. In a meeting with African leaders on the sidelines of the United Nations General Assembly in New York yesterday, U.S. President Donald Trump said the U.S. is deeply concerned about the ongoing conflict and humanitarian situation in South Sudan, as well as in the Democratic Republic of Congo.
We're closely monitoring and deeply disturbed by the ongoing violence in South Sudan and in the Congo. Millions of lives are at risk, and we continue to provide humanitarian assistance. But real results in halting this catastrophe will require an African-led peace process and the sincere, really sincere commitment of all parties involved.
President Trump said he is sending U.S. UN Ambassador Nikki Haley to South Sudan and the DRC to discuss avenues of conflict and resolution and prevention.
As you well know, too many people are suffering from conflict in Africa. In the Central African Republic, the Congo, Libya, Mali, Somalia, and South Sudan, among others, they're going through some very, very tough and very dangerous times.
Mr. Trump said the U.S. Secretary of Health and Human Services will also be traveling to Africa to promote a global health security agenda.
Yet we know that our prosperity depends above all on peace. The United States will partner with the countries and organizations like the African Union that lead successful efforts to end violence, to prevent the spread of terrorism, and to respond to humanitarian crises.
President Trump noted the African continent has tremendous business potential.
Six of the world's 10 fastest growing economies are in Africa. Increasing American trade and investment across diverse industries, including agriculture, energy, transportation, healthcare, travel, and tourism, will further transform lives throughout the continent.
South Sudan First Vice President Taban Dengai is expected to address the assembly later this week. Kenya's Electoral Commission tweeted today that the rerun of the Kenyan elections will be moved from October 17th to October 26th as it seeks more time to fix the issues that led to annulling the first vote. VOA's Jill Craig explains to South Sudan in Focus editor Carol Van Dam why the commission, or IEBC, as it is known in Kenya, decided to delay the vote.
They said that they did this in their tweet. They said it was in order to ensure that the commission is fully prepared to deliver an election that meets the standards set out by the Supreme Court. And it's referring to the full judgment that was given yesterday by the Supreme Court as to why it annulled the results of the presidential election from August 8th. And in that particular ruling, it did place quite a bit of the blame on the commissioners of the IEBC, you know, also mentioning that they had ignored a court order to open the computer servers, and also that they had announced the official results before actually receiving all of the official tally sheets from the individual polling stations and constituencies. So basically, basically what the IEBC is saying is that this extra week and a few days will give them more time to prepare adequately for the next elections.
Even though they did refuse to act promptly and refuse to do the things that they were supposed to do, as far as the commission is concerned, is it a technical problem now, and is that why they're delaying it even further?
Yeah, one of the problems is that the French company that deals with some of these electronic systems, they had come out with a statement a few days ago that said that they would not be ready, they couldn't reinstall the systems by the October 17th election date. So that's one factor that no doubt went into the IEBC's decision. Also, I think they're still trying to figure out some personnel issues because the opposition has consistently said that if some of these commissioners and some of the secretariat are not replaced, that they would be boycotting the election. So I think that the IEBC is trying to sort of come up with the best solution that they can, and so this gives them a little bit extra time to do that. And it's worth mentioning that the IEBC, by constitution, has, per the constitution, has 60 days from the day of the original ruling to conduct the next the fresh elections.
And so we're still within that time frame, right?
Correct. Yeah, October 31st would be the end of those 60 days.
It appears, by all accounts I've seen, that the President of Kenya is abiding by all of these things that are going on as far as delaying the election, but abiding by all the terms that are supposed to go on for this next election, correct?
Correct, but he's not happy about it. He gave remarks a few minutes, actually, before the IEBC gave this this announcement that they would be postponing elections by a week, and he gave some remarks that said that he would comply with the court's judgment, but it is the constitutional right of Kenyans to elect their leaders of their choice, and that is not negotiable. So he also said that the court did not engage in the proper scrutiny and verifications of the forms, and he was clearly upset with the court, but he said that he would abide by their decision. So with that said, that's sort of the climate that we're going into with the next elections.
That's VOA correspondent Jill Craig. She was speaking to Carol Van Dam from Nairobi this past hour. Police are holding a group of men, including some police officers, for allegedly killing two people, including a small child, Tuesday night, during two armed robberies in Juba's Gudele neighborhood. Dimo Silva Aurelio has the details for VOA from Juba.
Police say armed robbers attacked two homes in Gudele's Block 5, killing a two-year child and a teenager. Seven suspects are in police custody, but residents are complaining about the slow response time. It took police 10 hours to arrive at the scene of the crime. James Lakou is the father to the child who was killed. Speaking in Arabic, Lakou says his wife was shot in her left hand, but her condition is improving at Juba Teaching Hospital.
My wife was seated on the bed carrying a baby, and when they heard her voice crying, they shot at us in the house. When she was shot, I decided to open the door, and they entered inside, asking me where is the money, and I told them, check my trouser pocket, you will find money. When they got it, they again asked, where is Sam? I told them that is all I have. One of them said, let us finish them, but another one said, no, let's go.
Another resident of Juba Gudele neighborhood who does not want to be identified for fear of revenge from the army says residents of Gudele have had sleepless nights for the past months. Speaking in Arabic, she says residents were terrified they would be killed if they tried to rescue their neighbors from the armed robbers. When the shooting started, we could hear a woman's loud voice, and after they left, they came out the following morning to find out what happened. She says only to find this baby dead in the house. She says these days each one of them think whether they will wake up alive or dead. Gudele resident Francis Taban says the government must send police to patrol Gudele and other residents and other residential areas at night. Speaking in Arabic, Taban says residents are left at the mercy of armed men who attacked families at night.
If robbers can come and attack people at home and the government cannot rescue people on time. Taking example of this brother of mine, when we came to his home in the morning, we did not get the government police. They came at around 9 a.m. and for them even to reach home here was difficult.
Police spokesman Brigadier General Daniel Justin confirmed that three of the suspects are from the police force. Earlier, there were unconfirmed reports that some suspects were soldiers in the South Sudan Army, but Justin dismissed that report.
We said they are from the organized force, but our investigation has proved that they are from CID.
Justin says the suspects will be tried in court and the police officers accused of being involved in the robberies and murders will be suspended without pay. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Juba.
China is asking South Sudan to make use of its fertile land and to seek a peaceful resolution to persistent conflict so the country can stop depending on food aid from donors. A Chinese embassy official in Juba says South Sudan has the potential to grow food and feed its hungry population. China recently donated 3,000 metric tons of rice to South Sudan. Waki Simon Wudu reports from Juba.
Don't just give a man a fish. Teach him how to fish. Once you offer a fish, it's only a meal. If you offer the way of fishing.
Zhang Yi, the economic and commercial counselor at the Chinese embassy in Juba, used a Chinese proverb to highlight China's efforts to encourage South Sudanese communities to become self-reliant in food production. Speaking in an exclusive interview to South Sudan in Focus, Zhang Yi says his country is concerned about the humanitarian crisis unfolding in South Sudan, where there is widespread hunger. He says the recent food donation from China is a short-term solution to the dire food insecurity in South Sudan. In the past 2 months, China donated around 3,000 tons of rice for hungry families in South Sudan. Zhang Yi says China has pledged overall 8,800 tons of rice to help avert hunger in Juba, the capital city.
This emergency relief is targeting most vulnerable groups of the country, including those IDPs, including those people need resettlement, including those churches, orphanage.
Zhang Yi says aid alone will not solve South Sudan's food crisis. He also acknowledged that the problem is not just about improving agricultural techniques. Millions of South Sudanese have fled their homes and farms due to persistent violence in the country. Zhang Yi challenged South Sudanese leaders to restore peace and focus on development.
If there is no peace and stability, farmers may not do their cultivation today. Even worse, in some of the areas, as I mentioned before, used to be the breadbasket of the nation. But due to these conflicts, the fightings, large or small, people are scared away and the land were left behind, growing nothing. So peace and stability is very, very, very important.
This is the third time China has donated food aid to South Sudan. In 2014 and 2015, the Chinese government also donated food to hungry families.
We continue providing South Sudan with food items, but we also in negotiation with South Sudanese side to cooperate in growing food in the fertile soil of South Sudan instead of only importing food from abroad. Because South Sudan is rich in fertile land, ample rainfall, good sunshine, and you have the White Nile going across the whole nation. There should be no reason South Sudan could not feed its own population.
Zhang Yi says the donation was at the request of the South Sudan government, asking partners to help ease the dire humanitarian conditions of millions of South Sudanese in need of food aid. The Chinese food donation is meant for the vulnerable population. But there are reports that top government and military officials have diverted some of the Chinese food aid for their staff and possibly for themselves. The spokesperson of the South Sudan National Assembly, Paul Yuani Bonju, told the VOA that lawmakers and parliamentary staff received 300 bags of rice and explained why.
It is yet to be distributed. So what is happening, it is brought, but on my side, I'm saying priority actually should be given to the staff who I consider actually to be among the vulnerable group. This should be given to them. And if some members, yes, are taking, then they will take. But I consider, and I still repeat myself, that priority should be given to the employees of the parliament, who are the cleaners, the drivers, and the watchmen, etc.
Unconfirmed reports indicated that 100 bags of rice were distributed to employees of the National Assembly, while the other 200 were distributed to lawmakers. South Sudan in Focus could not independently verify why the Chinese food aid was dispersed to support parliamentary staff and lawmakers at the National Assembly. Repeated calls to the South Sudan Relief and Rehabilitation Commission for comment on this story went unanswered. For VOA News, I'm Waki Simon Wudu in Juba.
You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. South Sudanese students in Uganda take part in a day of peace. Find out more when we return.
For in-depth news and analysis on events in South Sudan, tune in to South Sudan in Focus, Monday through Friday from 1630 to 1700 UTC. We are also on the web at www.voanews.com/South Sudan or download our podcast on iTunes. That's South Sudan in Focus on VOA Africa.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today.
Tell us something that you accomplished that took great courage to do.
Learning to speak my wife's dialect. She could not speak my language, so I decided to learn her language so I could communicate with her.
Understanding people's opinion pass before you seek to be understood is very important, and it's what I work upon and I have overcome successfully.
Oh, my studies at a master's level. I think I needed to have a master's in my life, so when I achieved that, it was a great achievement as a woman and as a mother.
Bringing people together to work on a project, and it was quite a difficult task. They didn't really want to involve themselves in the project, but I was able to convince them.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. South Sudanese students studying at universities and colleges in Uganda say they hope to use South Sudan's rich cultural diversity to foster peaceful coexistence among students in Uganda who have been torn apart by nearly 4 years of conflict. The students took part in the International Day of Peace under the theme Together for Peace, Respect, Safety, and Dignity for All. Simon Peter Piku has more for VOA from the Ugandan capital, Kampala.
The South Sudanese Students Union in Uganda is an umbrella of South Sudanese Students Associations from universities and colleges across Uganda. It organized a cultural gala last week as part of a series of events to mark the International Day of Peace. Organizers say the event brought together South Sudanese communities and students in Uganda who have been divided along tribal and political lines. Apari Albino, a student at Kampala International University, says political differences among South Sudanese leaders has strained relations between students in Uganda.
He finds there are students who belong to Riak, there are students who belong to Chirilo, there are students for Salva Kiir, and that thing is the one that have brought the division among students, just because of that war.
Ngor Joseph Akok, a South Sudanese student leader at Makerere University, agrees events such as the cultural festivals can help promote better understanding and foster peace among different ethnic groups.
The fact that I come from Barra Kazal, my friend here, come from Equatoria, can be ironed out when we come together in that culture there and we say that we are South Sudanese, but our country is diverse in culture.
Tribalism and hate speech, often instigated by events at home, appears to be entrenched among certain students. Yanga Victor, a student at the Makerere University Business School, says student leaders must work hard to foster a culture of peace.
They tell you that, I don't like this tribe, I don't like that tribe. But we are trying to see how we can change them. By acting exemplary, we mix up as leaders, we interact together, we ensure that we bring communities, for example, using the culture gala. That is a way of bringing students together.
Dance troops from South Sudan's regions of Bahr el-Ghazal, Upper Nile, and Equatoria participated in the cultural gala at the St. Lawrence University in Kampala. Student leader Martin Kaido says the festival was an opportunity for students who hail from different parts of South Sudan to get to know each other and build relations.
There are very many tribes around, but we united as one. You may know each other. And it's like just bring also peace together and relationship so that as a student also we should know the members we are dealing with. Even if we go back later, we shall relate to them also.
Albino agrees. He says all students should help plan and implement cultural programs which help develop social cohesion and peace among students from different communities in South Sudan.
If students are able to socialize, they are able to come together. They held meeting among themselves, they even interact among themselves. That is the real meaning of that cultural event that I have seen it has brought.
Victor notes, despite the success of cultural events and other peace-oriented activities, much more needs to be done to restore peace and harmony among South Sudanese.
We know that most of them are traumatized, most of them are developing that tribal kind of affiliation. They feel that if you're not from this tribe, you're not part of them. But we said no, we need to come together as students.
Akok says contributing towards peace building is not restricted to university campuses. He says recently he and some of his colleagues were part of an initiative by the African Youth Action Network, codenamed Operation Kindness, that brought together young people from different ethnic and political backgrounds who campaigned for peaceful coexistence and mobilized assistance for refugees in settlement camps.
We asked for the well-wishers to support our brothers and sisters in the camp, and we managed to help them because whoever had anything could present it, and we were able to help them. So in so doing, we feel we have helped the people, and we have advocated for peace as youth.
The United Nations General Assembly declared September 21st as a day devoted to strengthening the ideals of peace, both within and among all nations and peoples. This year's theme honors the spirit of togetherness, a global initiative that promotes respect, safety, and dignity for everyone forced to flee their homes in search for a better life. The UN Refugee Agency says more than 1 million South Sudanese refugees who were escaping violence in their country have sought shelter in Uganda. For VOA News, I am Simon Peter Piku in Kampala.
The Zeitz Museum of Contemporary Art, Africa, opens its doors in Cape Town tomorrow. The massive museum, itself an architectural work of art, houses Africa's largest collection of modern art and reflects the growing global importance of and burgeoning market for art being made on the continent. VOA's Anita Powell has a story from Johannesburg.
The Zeitz Museum of Contemporary Art, Africa is, in a word, ambitious. A century-old grain silo on Cape Town's historic waterfront has been slickly overhauled by star British architect Thomas Heatherwick to house the continent's largest collection of contemporary art, in the case of this museum, all of it made after the year 2000. The nine-floor museum strives to show that African contemporary art, so long overlooked on the international stage, is worthy of appreciation and attention. It attempts to thrill visitors with its array of exhibits. Some are inventive, some confrontational, some whimsical, and some puzzling. But, says curator Mark Kutsia, the museum's true ambitions are grander still.
I think the first
and foremost gesture of the museum is a political one. And that is to say that for a very long time, the narrative of Africa and the representation of Africans has been defined by others, by outsiders. And the museum's motivation is to say, let's create an institution where people from Africa, whether we were born here thousands of years ago or whether we immigrated yesterday, can contribute to the writing of our own history.
But he says, if you're not inclined towards deep thought, the art is pretty cool too. The museum houses the private collection of Jochen Zeitz, a German art collector and philanthropist and former CEO of athletics brand Puma. Visitors will be greeted by a massive dragon made of bicycle inner tubes with a 100-meter tail, the work of South African artist Nicholas Klöbel. They'll be dazzled by the whimsical, eye-searingly bright theatrical images composed by South African photographer Atipatra Ruga. They'll be dragged into the undertow of 10,000 Waves, a video exhibition by British installation artist Isaac Julian that assaults the senses on 9 screens. They'll be able to touch and take home prints of the stark, bold images of Angolan photographer Edson Chagas. And they'll be haunted by room after room of ghostly cowhides, plastered into ethereal shapes by Swaziland's Nandipa Ntabo. What visitors will not be able to do, at least not on opening weekend, is linger. That's because when the museum offered 24,000 free passes for 2-hour blocks during the grand opening, they were snapped up in just 9 minutes. African contemporary art is finally getting its due, says Hannah O'Leary, head of modern and contemporary African art for international auction house Sotheby's. While the market is still new, she says, and African artists have yet to command top dollar prices, Sotheby's first African art auction earlier this year brought in a record-breaking $3.8 million. While South Africa has always had a vibrant art scene, she says other African countries are on the rise, both in making art and in consuming it.
From the results of our first sale, we had buyers from 29 different countries in 6 different continents. And that's really very significant. We're not talking about just selling South African art to South African buyers. We are taking the greatest art from across the continent, and we know that that has an international appeal. So we are selling to collectors in Africa, but also in North America and Europe.
But, says Kutsia, visitors should not be scared away by the museum's $38 million renovation, its untold millions of dollars worth of art, or its elegant exterior. Nor, he says, should they be scared away by the $13 ticket. Citizens of African nations get free admission every Wednesday, and children's passes are always free. That's because, he said, art is something everyone needs.
The thing that separates us from animals, the things that makes us unique, is our identity. It's the pride in who we are. And I think that if we remove cultural representation and say it's not a basic need, where does that leave us? What meaning does that give us in life?
Deep questions indeed, and ones that the museum hopes to provoke, if not to answer, when it opens its doors. Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
And that's our show for this Thursday. We leave you with the song Sudanese Girl by Joseph Mayanja and Freedom.
Keys Records. Hey, yo, yo. Freedom Boys!
Don't die, cause they can be your Freedom Boys. Don't die, cause they can be your Freedom Boys.
Lamba dam bam bam, Freedom Boys coming in a combination. Lamba dam bam bam, Sudan, Sudan, Uganda, rock the nation. Yagala Uganda girl, dem bang kude yala yala ira talim deka o.
Sudanese girl, in Tumsai, Jemili, Mohilu.
Nampena wangu, ata niki kosa mali ya nani biki ya banana.
Agiltani, hilo food, lagagi, anadi ide.
Yagala Uganda girl, dem bang kude yala yala ira talim deka o.
Sudanese girl, in Tumsai, Jemili, Mohilu.
Nampena wangu, ata niki kosa mali ya nani biki ya banana.
Agiltani, hilo food, lagagi, anadi ide.
Sudanese
girl, in Tumsai, Jemili, Mohilu.
We've been listening to Joseph Mayanja and Freedom Boys with the song Sudanese Girl. I'm Ayan Bior in Washington. Thanks for joining us. We'd like to know what you think about the show. Send us your comments at southsudan@voanews.com, or you can find us on our Facebook page, South Sudan in Focus. Tune in again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Girl, be what you gonna touch? Feeling like Jerry.